Around the world and coast to coast, this is the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Phil Nason Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I am so happy to have you here. You're listening to us daily at Maximum Sports Channels, daily at the 405 Media, Armed Forces Radio. You're also hearing us on SiriusXM's podcast network. We're really thrilled to be a part of them. We're thrilled to be on iTunes and Stitcher and all the podcast catchers, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. They all carry this show. Subscribe and it'll be delivered straight to your device of choice. We are sponsored by Bovada and the Dollar Shave Club. Make sure you hit those links. Get some great deals. Better deals than the Utah Jazz have received this playoff season, because they are having a tough time with the Golden State Warriors. They have a game later on today, game 3 in Utah, and joining me to talk about that and a whole host of other NBA stuff, Amar's in the house. What's happening?
Oh, not much, you know, just the best time of the year, you know, it's the NBA playoffs, so we get to see the best teams play and in some cases, some teams that maybe should not have made it this far.
No, I know, like Toronto. Is it because they're playing LeBron?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I think the other part of it is that they have not shown up. And this is like, I love Toronto. They're a really good franchise. They've built something there. They have a lot of fans north of the border, but they just don't show up in the playoffs. And this is something that we've seen since their Vince Carter days. I don't know what it is. Maybe they're just, you know, it's finally warm up there. They kind of want to hang out outside and not be inside the court. I don't know.
I don't either. What about Utah? They belong there.
Yeah, I think they proved that with the way that they handled the Los Angeles Clippers in the first round. But, you know, I don't think that there's any team currently built that is built to deal with the Golden State Warriors. We're just seeing them do it to Utah. We saw them do it to Portland last round. We'll see him do it to either the Houston Rockets or San Antonio Spurs in the round after that. So, you know, Utah is just another stepping stone for them.
And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. And for the Jazz fans, I don't think that we have to worry about that. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Hey, we're here. We're in the playoffs. We haven't been here for 5 years.
The semifinals. But I want to ask you, and Jazz fans, you're free to chime in on this as well. What did you think about the remarks that, like, Andre Iguodala made about Salt Lake City and there's nothing to do there and they were really hoping it would be the Clippers?
Well, that's a team that likes to motivate themselves by creating some sort of media buzz.
You know, or it's trashing, like, the other people.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, they'll find a flaw or they'll take offense to something that they shouldn't have taken offense to, and they'll use that as a extrinsic motivation factor, which is kind of weird. I don't necessarily know what Utah's dance club or discotheque scene is like personally, but I can only imagine that what they have in Los Angeles is better. I don't think you should worry about that. Like, if it's a work job that you're on, concentrate on your work. That's what the other teams did. Michael Jordan, he did used to take that private plane to Las Vegas, though, in the NBA Finals. So,
and these guys are making more money than Michael Jordan. They could do the same thing if they wanted to.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, they'll figure it out what to do after Game 3, before Game 4.
I hope they lose both of those games in Utah. Then they'll have an excuse, you see. But you would think, though, that a team that blew a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals wouldn't need any extra motivation.
Yeah, especially because they have a new guy who's never really been that far before.
And he probably won't again.
Well, it's kind of like, is this the team that built its house on sand? And a lot of us fans are hoping for that. But
a house of cards, I call it. Based on Mr. Unreliable as the foundation.
Well, they do have a couple of jokers in that deck.
They sure do, don't they? Which ones would you think, who are the jokers on that team?
I'd like to say Draymond Green is number one for sure.
For sure.
He's like a joker in a lot of card games. That's also a wild card. The other joker, I'd have to say that's probably Steph Curry. If you're throwing behind-the-back passes in the fourth quarter of Game 7 at home and you're throwing it out of bounds. That doesn't seem like the exact type of thing a point guard should be doing.
You better be careful, because people are going to think that you're a hater.
Well, people better figure that out. You know, I've only been saying bad things about Golden State for 30 years. So
he's a hot dog, Steph Curry. You know what? I don't know. Do you remember 2 years ago when it was the first time in the finals for them? They were playing Cleveland, and when they arrived,
Cleveland team.
Yeah, when they arrived to Quicken Loans Arena, and I Googled a flock of peacocks.
Yeah,
and I put that picture up on Twitter. I said the Warriors have arrived at the queue, because they've been strutting for years. These guys.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. Like, this is a team that had not done anything in the playoffs since,
They blew a 3-1. They blew a 3-1 lead. Now, no one's ever done that.
Yeah, see, but, like, that's just being a hater and, you know, look at how bad my team is. I guess.
Well, I'm a Knicks fan, so I hate all teams.
Well, that's because you're, like, a national podcaster. Like, every fan base thinks that you're out to get them.
Because perhaps maybe I am, but you know what? They don't like it when I see things in a different manner than them. You know, I like the Utah Jazz fan base because they're pretty laid back. I love the Atlanta Hawks fan base. I love most of the fan bases, you know, but when you look at this Warriors team and you see this Golden State team and you wonder, you know, Hill's out. Does he make a difference in this series if he's healthy?
Well, I think he does, mainly because that's another guy who hits open shots from three. I don't think that he's better defensively than Shelvin Mack, for sure.
Well, that's not saying a lot.
That's not saying a lot, but, like, just because you're better defensively doesn't mean that you're actually impacting the game either way, because Golden State's offense, invariably someone's going to be open.
Usually, and, yeah.
Yeah, like, they know what they're doing, and being an okay defender or being a good defender is not going to be the difference maker. You need to have excellent defenders.
Defenders.
Yeah, and like that Kawhi Leonard style or, you know, LeBron James in Game 7 style. Like, you need guys who are able to take it to that next level instead of, you know, perhaps fundamentally sound players who just don't have the athleticism or, like, the ref's blessing to stay on the court. It's been a little bit of a disappointing playoffs for Rudy Gobert, for sure.
It has been, you know. And then he had an unfortunate exchange there with Steph Curry, and they're mocking this guy everywhere. They got him dancing with Mother Teresa on some YouTube video I saw, you know, because he got spun around a bit because there was one switch too many, and he wound up guarding Steph Curry. I thought that was pretty unfair, considering that Rudy Gobert is one of the best defensive players in the game.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's unfair, because, like, you see some of these other big men right now who technically could be able to stay in front of a guy like that. I don't know how true that is, but, you know, some Wolves fans have a lot of high hopes for Karl Anthony Towns to be able to defend guys and switch on the perimeter. But, like, defensively, Utah's got to do a much better job of fighting through screens, so this never has to happen again.
Well, you got Shelvin Mack out there, for God's sakes.
Yeah, well, you know, he seems
the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, I have to say that he's done a much better job this playoffs than Trey Burke, who finally got into it.
Hey, is he still in the NBA?
He had, like, a few assists in that blowout win in Game 3, so...
All right, so he's still playing. Okay, I didn't know for sure. Because I still remember a night when you and I were broadcasting, the night of the draft, if I remember.
Yeah, I really thought it was going to be a great career for him.
What did I say? I went the opposite way.
You totally broke it down based upon, like, the defensive schemes that they played in Michigan, how the NBA offensive players are going to all, like, it doesn't matter where he's hidden, he's going to be in trouble. The fact that he had a really good run in the
tournament. No, that was actually you that broke that down. I just said he's came out 1 year too soon and he's an idiot, just like all those guys were.
You mean the guy who used to send dick pics and had to apologize for it in conservative Utah was an idiot?
Oh, right, yeah, huh?
And then he made fun of that disabled man on social media.
Oh, yeah, huh?
Yeah, so, like, he's... kids, made a few mistakes, but most just people a couple. Have that age.
Well, of course, you know, the thing is
no, it's not like he went to North Korea to hang out with a dictator.
So. Well, he could, you know what, if he keeps that fantastic play of his up, he might end up playing in South Korea. You never know.
Or, you know, if
look at Eric Thames. Look at Eric Thames from the Milwaukee Brewers. He went to SK and he turned out pretty good so far.
Yeah, see, that's an interesting story. I think the more reliable one for basketball fans would be to look at Jimmer Fredette, another smaller, quote-unquote, point guard.
He's tearing it up in China, dude.
Yeah, like maybe that's what happens to Trey Burke because he'll make more money over there, especially with he'll be able to somewhat rehabilitate his Michigan credentials as a big-time player and big-time scorer. And he's still a young guy. He's like 24, maybe 23 years old still. So you never know.
Yeah, you know what? It could be. I think we had a little intercom action there. Hopefully I got it all out so you didn't get annoyed by the succulent sounds of the Akron Public Library announcing another book fair that no one seems to want to go to. But anyhow, you know something with Utah for me? I'm just really thrilled that they've gotten as far as they have. I love the fact that they beat the Clippers. People gave me a hard time, and you through me, about the last appearance here when I called them a paper tiger, but I've been calling them a paper tiger for so long it's not even funny. And I was really happy that they came back and won that away series the way they did. Everybody won it on the road. I thought that was fantastic. What great drama.
It was, especially because you have, there was like an actual penalty to losing. Like whichever team was going to lose was going to go into the offseason with three starters who are free agents. For Utah, that's Hid, Hayward, and Ingles. But for the Clippers, for this crew that's been around for a while but never gone out of the second round, they have some really hard looks that they have to take. The hubbub seems to be that they're going to want to try and keep Chris Paul. Hopefully, J.J. Redick takes a hometown discount and maybe they'll be able to get rid of Blake Griffin, and I think that's a really weird thing to do because Blake Griffin seems to be like a, you know, he's a good commodity right now, but he's always injured as well. So like, I don't know how to fix the Clippers. I am definitely happy the Jazz won. Everything, you know, they've done everything they wanted to do. They won the division. They won 50-plus wins. They won a playoff series. If the goal was to keep Gordon Hayward happy, I think they've done that. Playing against the Warriors, they just got to show a little bit more heart, maybe win a game or two.
And or it'll four. Be perfect.
If they win four games, that would be amazing to watch their fan base crumble again for a second year.
That would be great. But, you know, so how do they win four games? How do they win one game?
Well, it starts with one game. Like, you got to do a little bit better job on getting back on defense. You should know by now that this is a team that likes to counter-strike and transition, and that transition also includes off of misses. It's not just off of steals. Heck, even Golden State can score on you even if they're taking the ball out of bounds. So Utah needs to go back on defense more. Some of the guys who write about the Golden State Warriors were saying that if Utah does a little bit better job on the offensive glass, that could be a benefit as well. The only way that you're going to do that is if you're going to kind of abandon small ball a little bit. If you play Favors and Gobert at the same time, that's giving you something that worked 2 years ago against Golden State that they haven't seen since then, and that no NBA team has seen in this offseason so far, is like a very traditional 1980s, 1990s style, you know, power forward center type of front court. That may be interesting to see, but, you know, it's, I think the way that these two teams play is that they're always trying to probe and get that mismatch on offense. So there's a give and take there, but if Utah goes big, gets the rebound, slows down the game, they have a chance of winning one in Utah, and they need to start by winning one and then moving from there.
George Hill's going to matter. He needs to be able to play. I think that's going to make a difference. I think it'll make a lot of difference.
Yeah, I think everyone is banged up at this part of the season for sure, and you like his veteran poise. Like, he's been there before. Guys like Shelvin and Raul Neto and Dante Exum have not.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask you about. Why isn't Dante Exum playing more? He's probably the best one of that bunch when George Hill's out.
Yeah, I think so too, because he's able to switch on to small forwards with his 6'6 length and 6'9 wingspan, plus his speed and athleticism. There has to be something there. Maybe they're challenging him to be better. And
he ain't going to get better sitting on the bench.
Well, that's my argument, exactly. Like, especially because you've invested so much money into him, millions of dollars at this point.
And time, too. I mean, we waited for him a long time. Put him out there and let him find out. If you're going to lose to Golden State, you might as well go out with a bang. You want to try to keep Gordon Hayward, you better show him you got somebody in the wings that can get him the rock.
Yeah, and I think they're doing too much to try and help Gordon Hayward out. Like, they're playing his buddy from Butler instead of the guy who could actually help him get to the next level or the next round of the playoffs. And that's just the wrong way to do it. I get it that Shelvin played for Quinn Snyder in Atlanta and played for, I'm forgetting his name. Brad
Stevens.
Brad Stevens at Butler.
The coach of the year?
Well, yeah, exactly. The coach of the year who's almost always on the brink, right?
So. Maybe on Twitter he's the coach of the year.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, there's a disproportionate number of Boston Celtics fans on Twitter. So
bandwagon fans, really. If you ask them about Robert Parrish, they wouldn't know who he is. Or even Tiny Archibald, they wouldn't be able to do it without Googling.
You know, if you ask them about, Ray Allen, they're like, what, the guy from the Heat?
Yeah. Ask Kevin Garnett, he'll say, you mean Judas Shuttlesworth? But the thing is, for me, I'm really thrilled, honestly, that they've made it this far.
Yeah.
They being the Jazz. I think they can steal it. I would like to see Gobert more involved, too. He seems at times, this is just to me, of course, I've only watched about, 60 of their games, 65 of their games. He seems like he has a deer in the headlights look sometimes. And I don't think he has any reason to do that, because if he really wanted to, he could dominate Draymond Green. He could dominate Zaza Pachulia and JaVale McGee all at the same time.
Yeah, I think that he has that potential for sure. He's kind of been, well, number one, he is playing hurt. But no one comes back from that type of injury after two games. And secondly, he's kind of playing more tentative because he's fouled out quite a few of these playoff games so far. They're rooking him, as the Fizdale would say. And as a result, he's not as effective as he's supposed to be. I think the other problem, probably the bigger problem, is that his teammates aren't getting his back. And that's tough. Like, he was a guy who set screens for them and defended their mistakes all year. And in the playoffs now, they're freezing him out like he's Michael Jordan at an Isaiah Thomas-led All-Star game.
That's a good analogy. It's pretty close to true, too, I think.
They need to get him the ball, because that's the only advantage that Utah has over Golden State, is the fact that Gobert is better than whatever center they have, and they need to make him a guy who scores 20 a game. If he's scoring between 15 and 17, then they'll take that instead of a guy who could be scoring, 20 to 25.
Right, that's a good point, too. And that makes Hayward more effective, too. You got to play the inside-outside game with Golden State, I think.
Yeah, you got to attack the glass. You can miss threes in an open gym by yourself,
Absolutely, and I'm sure Gordon misses those sometimes, too. But sometimes, too, it looks as if they're playing hero ball out there instead of team ball, and I think they need to get back to team ball. And one of those ways is what you said, get Gobert more involved and let him dust those guys and take it to them and get a little more physical. Derek Favors. These guys, you could push these guys around a bit. They're a big, that team is, they whine more than any 70-win team I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think maybe you can match their physicality for sure. That's something which they have to really look forward to in Game 3.
I think you're right. Houston, San Antonio. Thought that the Spurs were going to be out of it because they lost Tony Parker, and I think they like a lot of good teams, they just plug and play, and they're good, and they just destroyed Houston in Game 3.
Yeah, it was probably the coolest indicator is the fact that this is a Spurs team, as you said, that does plug and play. They're getting reliable minutes from a bunch of players because the way Coach Pop always uses his entire roster the entire season long. And, you know, they're getting to the line more. They're killing them on the offensive glass. They're getting second chance points, third chance opportunities. I think they had a fourth chance opportunity once in game two. But, like, they're just doing such a better job than Houston is. Like, they're ready for this increase in precision where Houston doesn't seem like they are. They looked unstoppable in game one. Tony went out. But they haven't made that step up to play at this level of precision that's needed.
That's a good point, too. And that's what San Antonio does. They get more and more precise as the games go on, especially in the playoffs. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. I think that they beat Houston in this series. James Harden played better in Game 3. He chucks a lot. They basically, that Spurs team, though, they just shut guys down. And they decided, it looked to me last night, they just figured, you know what, let Harden get his. And we'll just close the door on everybody else, which is basically what they did.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic game plan because Harden, like, instead of trying to stop him, they're doing their best to kind of corral him. And he's shooting under 40% from overall. He's shooting 33% from three. He's taking 58 shots. The next closest guy on the team is, you know, Trevor Ariza, who's shot over 25 less shots or something. It's ridiculous. And it's kind of like the Gobert thing with Utah against Golden State. Like, this is a team that's going to need Clint Capella to be more than just a rebounder and a shot blocker. They're going to have to rely on him from being able to do stuff to break this defensive scheme. And, you know, so far he's had pretty good results. He's shooting nearly 90% from the line. He's shooting nearly 80% from the field. But, again, he's a guy who's the fifth option, and probably the way to beat this scheme is to make him the third option.
That's a good point, too. And the Spurs, they got Dwayne Dedmon.
I love his
My
game.
God. He's having a good time down there, you know, but Clint Capella's kind of taking care of his business, which is predictable. It's okay. Here's the thing. I think Coach Popovich said, you know what, let Clint Capella beat us. If Clint Capella can beat us, then we don't deserve to win. If Eric Gordon can beat us, we don't deserve to win. If Lou freaking Williams beats us, we don't deserve to win. Let Harden go out and do his thing, and we'll close the door on everybody else. And that's what they've done. I've enjoyed watching them beat Houston. I like Houston's team, though. I enjoy watching D'Antoni coach because he doesn't really coach. He's more like an orchestrator. He's created this fantastic offense, this high-powered offense, and when it clicks, it's awesome to watch. But it ain't going to click against a team like San Antonio, which is the only drawback. Great regular season team, but they ain't no championship team.
Yeah, like San Antonio is just on a different level. Like they're getting great minutes from Jonathan Simmons right now.
Yes. You know, they're not a championship team because they don't have a championship scheme. That's what I was going to say. I forgot that part. I need to be more clever, you know. But I think Jonathan Simmons has done a good job. And the LaMarcus Aldridge played really good in Game 3, too. And people were waiting for a bounce back. I was just waiting for him to show up.
I was surprised personally, excuse me, because, like, he's never been someone who impressed me in the playoffs before, especially in road games. So, it's interesting. He did finally show up. I don't think they necessarily needed him in the first round. It doesn't look like it because they made it out without him. You kind of figure that they probably would have loved him against, you know, Memphis, but it's ridiculous. I think that this is a team that's just built to withstand anything that can be thrown at them. And one guy who's going to be shooting 30 shots a game is not a team that's going to scare them.
Man, you got that right. That's exactly right. If they get past Houston, I think they do. I think that this series with Golden State, I really hope Utah beats Golden State, dude. I really want to hear. Because their fan base, the Golden State Warriors fan base, they're not that bad, but they're not that good either. They're like the teeter totter where that's stuck in the middle, useless.
Yeah, well, you have a lot of fans right now who may not be full time basketball fans,
That's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. Like the Heat fans 2 years or 3 years ago.
Yeah, like we're receiving a lot of friendly banter from some really good fans from Golden State, but we're also receiving a whole bunch of like, I don't know what to say. Just like, these are kids, so you can't get angry at them for what they say. So like, we're getting a lot of that. And like, they've never been humbled before because they weren't Golden State Warriors fans during the 70s and 80s and 90s and 2000s. They just joined the fandom very recently.
Rick Barry played for Golden State Warriors, in case you're wondering.
There's like, who's Rick Barry? You mean Brent Barry?
Joe Barry Carroll. Remember Joe Barry Carroll? He played for the Warriors with George Karl.
Yeah, they don't even remember like
George Karl being the coach.
Donyell Marshall or Latrell Sprewell.
Yeah, Latrell Sprewell. Do you remember PJ Carlissimo?
Oh my God, yeah. He was the original choker. But of course, that was assisted.
So we're just trying to give you a history lesson out there, you brand new fans of the Warriors.
Yeah, Owens, like Don Nelson,
Billy
thought
Owens
that he'd be the future. So.
The future. And he is the future. He was the future father about, well, whatever. Anyway, the whole point is that they do that. And the Heat fans used to be like that. Cavs fans are like that too, some of them. They're very bandwagonish. Is it cool to be a bandwagon fan, you think? Because I read this baseball thing the other day by somebody who said it's cool to be a bandwagon fan and we should embrace the bandwagon fan.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to be down with that. Like, I guess like it's cool to see a team win and have like no skin in the game, but that's not what real fandom is. Real fandom is having it looks like a 3-to-1 ratio of unhappiness to happiness. So,
you just described Knicks fans, only it's like 1/4. It's not even 1/3. It's 1/4. There's only 25% happiness.
Hey, you had that Charlie Ward fight. That was pretty good.
That was freaking great, by the way.
More people should.
You know something? I think so, too. You know, like Kelly Oubre. You know, Kelly Oubre, he had two fights this year, and he lost them both. I don't know. Did he lose the Kelly Oubre fight or the Kelly Olynyk fight? It was the Battle of the Kellys. And one Kelly came out on top, and the other one is probably going to get suspended.
Yeah, see, I think it's a tough life when you're a guy out there, especially in sports, and your first name is Kelly. But
yeah, huh?
Like, you kind of have a chip on your shoulder.
Kelly's a hot name for a chick, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially if you're a naval aviator. Kelly McGinnis.
Yeah.
Well, back to this Oubre thing. Like, I love how crazy this series is getting in Boston. It's just so physical. It's like a throwback series for us old guys. And I like the way that they're standing up to one another and, you know, guys are getting thrown out of the games. The refs are scrambling to try and regain control of blowouts. It's a lot of fun to see that compared to like the other games that we're seeing, which is just, okay, well, high screen pick and roll for a point guard. And maybe they shoot a three and then they go on defense. Like,
right.
This is a lot better. You see guys going to the hole. You see, you know, centers scoring in this series. I don't think we're...
Point guards losing their teeth?
Oh, my God, yes. Yes, more of this, please.
More of this, please. Yeah, you know, I wrote my column at Peachtree Hoops, but it kind of got a little bit mangled because the SB Nation hasn't caught up with the times or has decided to go further than they should. And have us write in these editors that don't let us do what we want to do. But that's another issue altogether. But
I thought it was all about this.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to put up some StatMuse graphs to accompany my piece, my 1,500-word piece, by the way. And some of them didn't come out, but that's neither here nor there. You know, the thing is, though, is that was a throwback. That little thing that Oubre did to Kelly Olynyk, that was nothing compared to the stuff that we used to do. Remember we did this two-part series, you and I, the Bad Boys documentary?
Yeah, exactly.
That's basketball. That's playoff basketball. People think that Oubre should be suspended for a year for that. Are you out of your freaking minds?
That would have just been a foul back in the day.
Actually, the only way it would have gotten to be a technical, first of all, that was not a dirty screen. Second of all, if it was, so what? Oubre's too soft then. If that was what knocked him out, then he deserves it. He should have been paying better attention. This isn't the regular season anymore. See, that's the problem with the NBA today is that they've gotten so soft in the chapstick league. You know, they have to put chapstick on before they touch the court so they can, so their lips are softer. And this is how, this is a sad thing. And so when you get one of those guys like Kelly Olynyk who's going to set a pick, maybe he raised his hand a little bit, whatever. You don't have to go crazy over it. Can you imagine Kelly Oubre playing in the days of the Detroit Pistons and the Bulls?
Well, I think he would have probably been taught that you got to play tougher. That's one way of looking at it. This league is one where they've changed the rules to make it easier to get fouls called. So, you know, it's.
But that's what the excuse is that they think that because the Bradley Beal say we need to be tougher, he was trying to exhibit his toughness.
Yeah, well, I guess you got to stand up for yourself when you think that things are going unfairly against you. But the big picture is that this is like we used to watch a league where I think it was Robert Parrish would – no, not Robert Parrish. It was – well, we've seen Robert Parrish just cold clock guys before.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Hakeem Olajuwon.
Mikhail, too.
Yeah, Mikhail as well. But I'm trying to remember what it was. It was that – I think Charles Barkley or maybe Bobby Jones. These are Philadelphia players, by the way. Trust the process.
Trust that process. They wouldn't know how to handle that one.
One player would hold Bird while the other player would punch him.
Yeah,
during the game. And now we're getting players having hissy fits.
Exactly, yeah. Why don't they just put some tea and crumpets out there and let them all wear white gloves and keep their pinkies up in the air?
Yeah.
It's surely turned soft. But the thing is when you look at this whole bunch and all this foolishness, if Kelly Oubre really wanted to show how tough he was, he would have just run Olynyk over instead of running over there and pushing him like he did. Just run him over when he sets a screen on you. That's when you show your toughness.
I agree.
Or show your basketball IQ and kind of look with your peripheral vision. You know, I know you don't get that anymore, you young folks, because you're staring at a computer screen all day. You know, look to catch him out of the corner of your eye and avoid the screen or slip the screen like the great players used to do when they were actually physical.
Or in this era, switch poorly, don't communicate with your teammates and let the other team score.
Well, there you go, too. Yeah, absolutely. And then laugh about it.
That's tried and true offense this year.
The Olé. You know, Kelly Oubre was the recipient of something like that in the first series against the Hawks.
Exactly.
When Dwight Howard decided to let him just waltz through the lane and dunk while he was boxing out for the rebound.
That was just so frustrating for me to watch. We need to just do a wall. You know, I'll just wait to see what you do at Peachtree because things are just being set on fire over there. It's just unfortunate.
We have that show coming up. It'll be out later on. It'll be out Sunday morning at Peachtree. We talked about a little bit of that. We're going to talk more about it. There's a lot of things going on over at Peachtree, and I'm really lucky to be a part of it. But this series, though, with Boston's 2-1. The game 4, I believe, is Monday?
Yeah, I think so.
No, or Sunday.
Tomorrow. That's the TV game.
There's 3 games Sunday. I'm thinking of FanDuel. I don't know why. But you know something? I think that Washington wins that game in game 4, and I think Washington figures it out that, look, did you see the way they're just rocking up leads and going on these big-time runs? If they could ever figure out how to slow the Celtics down a little bit and sustain one of those runs, you're going to see what we saw on Friday night all over again. Every night, or Thursday night, whatever it was, game 3, you're going to see that throughout the rest of this series because Boston's really not that good.
Yeah, I think a huge part of what Boston does is their ability to get defensive overplays. When John Wall is playing the way that he is, you don't need to do that anymore. And that's really the key for the series. I love the way that he's doing it right now. He's all averaging 30 and 15 in this series. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, how about that? Isn't that amazing that a point guard would actually rack up 15 assists and score 30 points?
Yeah, that's 2 games for most of these point guards. So,
or first half for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, well, you know, he's working on his golf game right now. So,
yeah, I thought he was designing some more clothes. What is up with that, by the way? That's another thing that you would never have seen back in the old days of the NBA. What's you're a fashion designer now? No, Clyde Drexler, he would go to the haberdashery to get his stuff. Russell Westbrook goes to his little dressing room and with his little mannequins. And what is this? What happened to the NBA?
I don't know. I think it's the over influence of pop culture. And like, for some reason, some of these rappers have their own lines. Like Kanye West now goes to fashion shows and stuff, and he's involved in that type of industry. So to be like him, I don't know why you would want to be like him, but to be like him, I guess you have to do the things that he likes. Like, this is coming from a guy who doesn't have much of a fashion sense. So, you know,
I have none apparently, and it's okay. You know, here's my fashion
sense.
Like,
I'm a guy. Give me a break.
If my shirt and my jeans don't smell, I wear them until they start to.
Yeah.
And then I go get a different pair out.
It's a sense of smell. It's a sensibility. It's not a fashion sense.
And you know, Brute works good too. The spray, but that's neither here nor there. But you know what the thing is. LeVar Ball, you want to talk about fashion lines and clothing lines. They launched a shoe out there. The major companies were wise and said, hey, you know what? We're probably going to pass on your idea. LeVar Ball has got a shoe out there for $499, and allegedly he sold $2.5 million worth of them on the first day. It takes you 20 days to get him because, you know, he's got to send to China for the shoe to be made. That's a hell of a lot of money for a pair of shoes, especially for those shoes. They don't even look right.
And it's not just the shoes. I think it's like they have slippers for like $150, $200. Like,
are they pink?
Yeah, well, they will be, I'm sure, when they realize
I tell you what, if his son doesn't get bigger, he's going to be wearing lots of pink clothes in the NBA.
Oh, my goodness. I guess this is it. Like, if you can make that money, everyone else who isn't is jealous. But really, this is a guy who's done nothing yet. $500 for a pair of, you know, shoes?
Man, you can buy two pair of Jordans and one pair of Kyrie Irving shoes for that.
That's rent for a lot of people, you know? Like,
yeah, huh?
Like, that's there are more important things to do than to spend it on this type of luxury item. And it's just like a consumerism thing that, you know, we're never going to get because, like, we came from a certain standard where we understood the value of a dollar, and we had to know that you can't have everything that you want. And I guess it's just a problem that some kids are going to grow up wanting to have everything, and it's going to cause a lot of trouble.
$499 for a pair of kicks.
Well,
you know, I get my shoes for free from K-Swiss. And I'm at a point where I only ordered enough for the summer for my tennis. I went down to Walmart. I shouldn't say this. K-Swiss probably listening and kicked my ass for it. But I went to Walmart and got these pair of Dr. Scholl's, these gray, kind of like cross trainer things. And these things are really comfortable. And they only cost me like $17.99. And they've lasted now 2 months. And I walk everywhere I go because I need to do that for my shins. Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, I try to stay as fit as I can. And I could not see paying $499. I couldn't see wearing. It's really funny, Amar, when I order shoes, you talk about old school, and I'm getting them for free, I'm conscious of the price.
Of course. You have to be.
And I'm getting them for free. I can have anything I want, and yet, you know what, I'll take these because, you know, they're only $110.
Well, I think that we're going to see that exact type of thing happen, that if you see a kid out there with these shoes, he's going to be marked. They're going to want to take these because they're $500.
$500. Yeah, but you know what? I have this theory that within a year's time, those shoes you're going to find on eBay for $10.
Yeah, it's a boom economy right now. Get them, sell them on the secondary market, because I'm sure in the next 2 years they're not going to be worth $500.
Can you know whose fault this all is? ESPN's. They're the ones who gave that guy the platform and got his head so big, that guy being LeVar Ball, because Lonzo Ball, I didn't even know that kid's first name. I only think about LeVar.
Yeah, he's messing that up, and he's messing it up for his other two sons as well by getting them on the paper documents for the shoe deal. That's going to ruin their eligibility for his other two sons, who are also basketball players.
Well, he's not thinking about that.
He's not a smart guy.
Well, he in a way he is, because he did make $2.5 million off some shoes that may or may not be able to be worn on a basketball floor, because nobody's worn them because they haven't been made yet.
Yeah, they haven't been tested. He could have a really bad injury. Yeah, I hope he doesn't. He's a young guy. You know,
right? Of course, I don't wish any bad luck.
Exactly. But like,
whole thing's stupid, though.
His dad is definitely. Like, if his dad was less in the picture of making it about him, they could have signed a deal with Nike, you know? But instead, you're going with your seventh option and you're charging $500. Man.
And he's probably paying like $6 a pair.
Yeah. Well, yeah. People are going to make money off of this for sure. They're,
for sure.
That's the way the world works.
Well, you know something from what I've seen of his two younger sons? Maybe it's a good idea that he does have their name on that so they can get some paper, because I don't think they're going to get paid playing basketball anywhere.
Well, I think his the middle child, he seems like he's got a better shooting stroke, and that can help you get onto the court. Look at Steph Curry's younger brother, Seth Curry. He may not be a star, but he could make an NBA roster and hit those corner threes.
Yeah, he was, you know, Seth Curry, though, in all fairness, he had a really good year in Dallas. I thought that was fantastic what he did. He was able to do, he kind of shook off that shadow, if you will, and took care of his business. And I thought that was a great story. You know, I thought it was funny listening to the mom. You know, she's going, I want to support both of my kids. We need to talk to the NBA about sorting the schedule out a little better so I can be at both my son's games. You know, that's a, but those are good parents.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not saying LeVar Ball isn't, but, you know.
Yeah, like, I hear you on that. Like, so many of these NBA parents, you only hear about one of their kids making it, and this Curry family. I don't know if you can call them underdogs, because they seem to have everything working out for them.
Well, you know where it starts. They have two parents in the house. Okay, maybe Dell was gone playing basketball, but that's how it starts. They have a good foundation. Those kids, for a lot of the crap I give Steph Curry, they got a good foundation, those kids, all of them. They're all, you know, they're very respectful when you interview them and have them in front of you. They're very kind, very respectful. They look at you in the eye. They're not little punks like some of those guys. But let's see, what did we get to? Oh, what more do we have here? Cavs, Toronto, do we really get into that yet? Or no, we haven't, have we?
No, we just made a passing mention about how the Cavs are the Cavs and their fans. Are
well,
the
you
Cavs
know what?
Fans.
But passing mentions is really, if you don't really worship them, their fan base, again, bandwagon fans, they get upset.
Yeah, like where were they when it was John Lucas the second coaching your team, you know?
What is this mythical switch they talk about? They flipped the switch.
Yeah, was the switch playing a team that doesn't show up in the playoffs? Because
well, there you go. Like, well, that would be two teams, really. But
well, yeah, okay. Indiana, there's a lot of good Indiana basketball fans out there.
Great fans.
I think that there is a problem with what Paul George was doing, the way that, like, oh, well, you know, I'm triple teamed, I should get to take the last shot. Like, that's just dumb.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. And I think George Hill, if you ever get the chance, ask him if he's happy to be out of Indiana.
I think it's pretty obvious. We'll see that in free agency for sure.
If he comes back with that gold hair, you're in trouble, brother.
Yeah, the demolition, man. It's ridiculous. But, yeah, so Indiana had no chance against LeBron. Like, this is an easier way to the finals, it looks like to me, because they're playing Toronto, and Toronto won a Game 7 against Miami last year, went to Game 7 against Cleveland last year, but this Toronto team is not last year's Toronto team. They don't have Bismack Biyombo, for example.
Well, there you go. Yeah, exactly.
You know, Ibaka has a better three-point shot, but I don't think that he's making the same type of emotional hustle plays, but... This Toronto team, they don't look like they're capable of winning because they're primarily a jump shooting team. So, you know, I guess that works out for Charles Barkley and us old guys who like to see teams try and score inside first. But, like, LeBron, he doesn't even have to go 80% in the East. You know, he can save something for the finals, which is nothing the other East teams, like, can save, because they're all killing each other right now trying to get it to the East Finals.
Exactly. You know, that's just it. They're playing a bunch of laid-out sallies. There's nobody in the East that can guard LeBron. And the rest of that bunch, they don't play any defense. They're not playing defense now. You bring up that jump shooting thing. It works if you have good jump shooters. Ask Golden State.
Yeah, or if you get open jump shots. If your jump shooting is reliant upon guys going one-on-one and then taking a mid-range jumper that's contested, that's not the same quality of shot.
No, it's not. That's just called chuckers. Yep. There's a difference.
Yeah.
Ask Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook all about that.
Yeah, that's Scotty Brooks. Like, I was so impressed by what he's doing as a coach.
Dude, I had to apologize, man.
Yeah, same here.
For all the things that I said, because I'm telling you. And people got mad at me because I did my top 10 coaches and I didn't have Brad Stevens in my top 10. At that time, he was hadn't even won a playoff series yet. You're already anointing him ahead of guys like Eric Spoelstra and Rick Carlisle. And I'm thinking, what?
You can't honestly say he's better.
They do, because you know why? They believe everything ESPN tells them. They don't really know. And the thing is I just, to this day, I don't care. I think Scotty Brooks made my top 10, and maybe even my top 5 now that I think about it, because of the job that he did. Part of it is because of the crap I gave him when he was coaching the Thunder. I thought that he had no control over that bunch. The truth is he didn't. They did what they wanted to do because the same team did it when Donovan was the coach. They did the same thing in the Golden State series where they just started chucking when they were up 3-1.
I think that there are still some criticisms that are valid that have carried over. Like, what is he diagramming in timeouts at the end of the game?
Well, he's giving them the route to the dinner where they eat. That's
yeah,
all.
Yeah, exactly.
He forgot that they have Google Maps on their phone now.
I do like what he's doing in Washington, though. That's a more competitive lineup, I suppose. It's less star reliant. You have Morris. You got the Polish Hammer.
Otto Porter,
definitely. Like, these are guys who are making strides and, you know, helping your team win. Like, I've been super impressed with what we're seeing from Bojan. You know, like, he's shooting 50% from three. Back when he was with, Scotty Brooks was with OKC, he wasn't getting any bench production like that. He wasn't getting anything like that from Morrow or anyone. So
he didn't get anything from anybody. You know why? Because everyone, they don't get the chance. The only time you get to shoot when you're with that team, with the Oklahoma City Thunder team, is in pregame warmups and at the shoot around. Because once the ball went in the air, it was Kevin left. Russell Wright. Okay, yeah, Serge. Remember what Serge Ibaka said last year? He goes, it's frustrating to bust your ass out there playing defense and not touch the ball for 8 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, set a screen, get the offensive rebound, get out of the way. That's not
involved. Well, that's why they lost, and that's why the Golden State Warriors are going to lose to somebody, because Kevin Durant still tries to pull the same thing in Golden State that he did over there, and they look at him funny.
Oh, it's the honeymoon stage right now because the fans want to say, oh, well, you know, he's an integral part, whereas didn't they have a better winning record when he was out? So, I don't know.
They really did.
Yeah, but we're not allowed to talk about that because we're haters.
Shush.
Because we don't have a team that's winning 60, 70 games a year. So,
speaking of that, my Knicks, what the freak? The general manager actually calling the Knicks to see if they can trade for Porzingis.
Yeah, and
because he missed an exit interview, for goodness sakes. I wouldn't have shown up either.
Right, the same guy who's running the Knicks, who is running his mouth, trying to get rid of, what now, their top two best players? Like, you're going to run the triangle with Derrick Rose? Okay.
Derrick Rose isn't even coming back. I heard Derrick Rose is going to play for Memphis.
I heard Derrick Rose was going to Besiktas. Like, seriously, what the hell? Like,
oh, yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing him do that.
He would be a lot happier with his on-court production because he'd be an MVP again.
But he would. I don't know if he could win an MVP there. Maybe in the maybe he could win an MVP in the Division II league.
Adrianic.
But I don't think. If he goes to Turkey or Russia, they'll clobber him there.
Well, yeah, CSKA Moscow has a much better defensive scheme for handling athletic point guards. Like, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, it's called the freaking guillotine.
Yeah. Love it.
He start fooling around. How's he going to act over there if he can't even? He gets homesick when he's in New York and his mother's in freaking Chicago.
Yeah, that's just pathetic. You know, that's. I don't even know how he was MVP, but that's.
Well, I do because he did have a good year.
He had a good year, but and he plus, wasn't the only guy who had a good year. There are other guys who had good years who actually won in the playoffs, but.
Well, that's true too. But they'll make that vote before the playoffs begin.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So anyway, so Knicks fans, you gotta get angry. I don't know if you can be even more angry. It's like that 1972 movie Network. You know, you gotta get up there and get angry. And I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore. Like this, Phil has, like this was like some level of this Machiavellian stuff. Just maybe he's hated the Knicks all along.
He hated their fans. Oh, yeah, that's no problem. You know what? They hated their fans, so it's all good. You know something? It's all good. And the thing is I don't think he's ever liked their fans, and that's probably why he took the team. He does some stupid things. Why, if you know Carmelo Anthony is not going to be able to do what you wanted him to do or what you wanted, your idea of an offense, then why in the hell did you resign him for all that money? And now you say he can't win, so I think the best thing would be for him to go elsewhere. That don't make sense to me.
Yeah, or like the other thing is, wouldn't Carmelo play well in a Hornacek offense, like what we've seen from him in Phoenix?
But they don't want him to run it. They want him to run the triangle.
The triangle only works if you have two of the top five best players on the team. In the
Amen.
League.
Thank you. and those two of those five better be killers, too.
Yeah.
Carmelo ain't no killer.
Well, he did win with Syracuse, so the potential is there.
But. Sure it is, but you know who the killer is in his family? It's going to be Lala, because she's going to end up on Basketball Wives and destroy his ass.
I hope he had a prenup.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure she does, too. You know, whatever, but you know something? This has been a fun show, my friend. Thank you so much, as always, for being here with me. I enjoy working with you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. This is always so much fun for me as well. It's a great chance for me to be a Jazz homer and hope they do well in Game 3.
And a great NBA analyst to boot. I hope they do well in Game 3. I hope they give Golden State the boot. I really do. And you can out there, I really urge you to go over to slcdunk.com and check out what Amar's doing over there. He breaks it down like no other. He's the best basketball writer at SB Nation. There's nobody even close. And I'm thrilled that he's here. You can find him on Twitter at AllThatAmar. He's the best. Just like you're the best. Next time, be good. And most importantly...
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.